It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends. Rest in peace, Pop's a legend. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up. Who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like this. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
Since July 4th of last year, basketball fans across the world have been waiting for this day. Well, not this day, but tomorrow, right? Game one, NBA Finals, Cavs, Warriors. It's the finals that everybody knew was going to happen a year ago, except for me. I mean, you guys know me. I was like a little skittish on the Warriors, and we'll get into that topic a little bit, obviously, tonight on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Thank you for joining your man, Jay Hicks, here. It is Wednesday, May 31st. Again, the finals tip off approximately 24 hours from right now. I feel like this is a monumentous occasion, man. Like, I don't even know how to put it into words. We've never seen three straight finals featuring the same two teams in the history of the NBA. We're talking like 70 years. That was the primary reason. I didn't think it was going to happen. But here we are, and we can debate the merits of how the teams got there and, you know, the quality of opponents and that sort of thing. But at this point, water under the bridge, both these teams are here. And at the end of the day, isn't this what everybody wanted to see? I think it is. So we're going to get into nothing but NBA Finals talk tonight. And because we had such a fantastic time with this gentleman, going back to our pre-playoff podcast, Triple P's. Not to be confused with the Triple B's, word to LeVar. We had to bring back my man Jabari Davis for yet another podcast. Jabari, from the car, calling us up on a Wednesday night. How you feeling tonight?
I'm great, Jay Hicks. I appreciate you having me back.
No doubt, man. And this is the man who is going to be celebrating a birthday tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, happy early birthday to you, Jabari. Do you care to tell the listeners how old you're going to be turning, or if you want to keep that odometer to yourself, man, it's all good.
Oh no, I'm not that type that's worried about that. I'm getting old. I'm going to be 38.
38. So, okay, that's a good age.
It's better than not making it to 38, I guess. So,
there's no I guess about it. There's no I guess about it. 38. I mean, I hope to get to 38 one day. I'm not quite there, almost, but not quite. No doubt you are right up our alley, man, as far as, you know, age and wisdom and experience and finals experience. You know, I don't know how many finals you've witnessed at this stage of your life. I'm coming up probably on close to probably about 25 NBA finals for me, maybe a little bit, maybe 26, something like that in that ballpark. So I would probably tack on about five or six more for you, something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right around. Honestly, I started watching, you know, as a very small child, but the first ones I can remember were from the mid 80s. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at about 32 years or so.
So we're looking at like Lakers Celtics. Houston Rockets slipped in there somehow on accident.
Somehow they got in there. Somehow, but they did it.
They did. All right, man. Well, in all those years, then, have you ever seen a finals like this? Have you ever seen a matchup like this? I mean, I guess it harkens back to those times of the 80s, but this kind of feels unique, though.
Yeah, well, for me, it does feel like those times in the 80s. Those Lakers and Celtics teams, they were both stacked. They had all types of, you know, all-stars and future Hall of Famers, you know, on there as well, just like this matchup does. You nailed it in the intro. We've never seen it exactly in the sense that we've never seen, two teams meet each other three consecutive years. I think we had three out of 4 years at one stretch in the 80s, but, obviously never six. For me, I'm excited. This is what it was all about. This is what we were all. This is what all of us were figured would take place, or at least thought there was a very good chance of it taking place. So now it's time to I always date myself when I make this reference, but you know what? Since I already admitted that I'm 38, folks will understand. But it's kind of like in the movie The Program when he said when the center used to say, "Okay, time to put the women and children to bed." that's where we are right now. All the talk about the playoffs prior to this doesn't matter. All the talk about the regular season, yeah, that was a lot of fun. No, now it's time for two juggernauts to get together.
Two juggernauts. That would be the word used to describe the challengers by the champion, LeBron James. But I was thinking about ways to approach this podcast because, again, first time, two teams, three straight years, all that. I think it's only happened 4 times in major American professional sports history. This is the 4th time that this has happened. And all the other times was like 50 years ago or 60 years ago was like the most recent. This doesn't happen in any sport, really. But I was thinking, how do I want to approach this, man? And I had all my questions laid out for you, and I was thinking, okay, and then we'll finish up with the prediction of which team we think are going to win. But nah, man, kill all that noise. Give me right now. Who do you think is going to win this series, Cavs or Warriors, and how many games? We're just going to get right to it.
Oh, you want to lead in?
No. It's not about being mad at you. I'm just excited. This is excitement.
I'm playing. Okay, so here's the deal. I hope that I'm wrong. I do, because I want another epic 7-game series.
Okay.
But I look at it and I say, and we can get to the breakdown later, but I still think that it's going to be the Warriors in either 5 or 6. That's my team. I just, when I'm looking at the matchup, it's tough for me to see anything around it.
Well, you're a California guy, so, it was to be expected, I think, on some level, right?
No,
it's not your team.
You're not familiar with Northern and Southern California.
Oh, okay, two different worlds, huh? The Bay and LA County is not the same, huh?
No. As they would say in the Bay, it's hella different.
Word to E. Fonzarelli, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I hear that, and that's conventional wisdom seems to believe that the Warriors will win this series in 5 or 6 games. I'm not mad at conventional wisdom. I will say that anybody who believes that the Warriors will win this game, excuse me, anybody who believes that the Warriors will win this series in 4 games is a fool. Okay?
Did they not watch LeBron in last year's finals?
Have they not watched LeBron his entire career? He got swept by the Spurs in 2007. And even that series was closer than people remember. They lost game 3 and 4 at home, I think, by a combined 5 or 6 points. Like, that series, it was a sweep, but it was closer than people remember. And LeBron was 22, dragging a bunch of misfits to the finals. This ain't that.
Yeah.
So this idea that the Cavs are going to get swept, I just want to slap the hell out of anybody I see even fix their face to say that. You talk about disrespectful. Sweep?
I think that's silly, and I'm going to be honest. I've seen some some guys that I respect. I've seen some guys that I have interacted with on numerous occasions, and have a great hold their basketball knowledge and opinion in a great deal of regard. Say stuff like that, but I'm sorry. Not just his entire. If you're paying attention at all to LeBron James, and we don't have to make this all about LeBron James. The way the Cavs have been playing, I don't see a situation where they're going to get swept off the court. I just don't.
Neither do I. I think there's no chance of that happening. Virtually none, barring significant injury. So the sweep thing just doesn't register for me on any level. And when I think about this series, there's a lot of reasons that go into it, and we have the whole podcast to break it all down. But I see the Cavaliers winning the NBA championship in 6 games And I'll tell you what else, Jabari. The more I look at this thing, the more I feel like the Cavs could win this thing in five.
Okay.
And I know that sounds like, like, I get that. That's what everybody's going to be saying right now. Like, no, I'm not on drugs. I'm not on dope, nothing like that. But I can validate it based on a slew of reasons, and we'll get into all of that. But so you said, though, you know, when you look at the matchup, you see five or six games for Golden State, and you just really don't see any way around it. What's the biggest thing that brings you to that conclusion?
I think when it all boils down to it, in last year's finals, the Cavs obviously you play great basketball. The Warriors, up until whether you want to blame it on the suspension of the kick or all of that stuff or not, but up until that point, had been playing great basketball. I look at a scenario where I know it's not a direct exchange, but you're essentially exchanging Harrison Barnes for Kevin Durant, and not only Kevin Durant, a motivated Kevin Durant that's playing probably his best basketball right now. I'm sure you saw him in that last series and actually throughout these playoffs. Steph is healthy and looking good. I just look at them as they've got too much firepower. Now here's the one thing I will say. I was asked to present a case for the Cavs on another show, and here's how I can see it taking place, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
If Tristan Thompson dominates the boards and they're making their threes, meaning Kevin Love is making them and mixing it up and also hitting the glass, it opens things up. For one, it gets them extra possessions, and you can't give a final team in general, but a team like the Cavs, you can't give them two and three and four shots at it. But also, the way that it opens things up for those other guys to go to work. And obviously, those other guys, I'm sure you've heard of them, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, those guys. Good.
They're all right.
Yeah, them. It opens things up so much for them that, much like Draymond is, in my opinion, the catalyst for what goes on, in Golden State, in a series like this, Tristan Thompson can play a significant role, a much more significant role than a lot of folks are used to seeing.
I don't disagree with that point. Now, so the Tristan thing is interesting, but I want to, first of all, kind of look at something that you pointed out a moment ago regarding the series last year. I have several bones to pick with how this series has kind of been molded. The last year's finals has kind of been molded over the course of the last year in terms of in the minds of people, how things went down. Okay. The first thing is the Draymond suspension. Okay. Apart from the fact that he deserved it, and not because of the act itself, but because of the accumulation of acts, he deserved a suspension. He should have got one in the Oklahoma City series, and he got off. This one was one too many. He already had a zillion technical fouls. The guy was out of control. He's kicking people left and right. He almost kicked Kyrie in the face, I think, earlier in that series. It just had to stop. You had to draw the line somewhere. He earned that suspension. But apart from that, for the people that believe that Draymond's suspension is the reason why the Cavaliers won that series, and I am so sick. I've heard, Jabari, so many highly respected national media people, not just fans and stupid memes. I'm talking highly respected national public figures who have television shows, radio shows, podcasts, all that, that will just casually toss out, oh yeah, Draymond Green getting suspended is the reason why the Cavs won. No, it's not, okay? And here's why that's flawed thinking. Number one, Draymond, although he missed game five, he played in three other games. He was out there in game three when the Warriors got ran by 30 in Cleveland, okay? Kevin Love didn't even play that night. And the Cavaliers beat them by 30, okay? Game six was back in Cleveland. Draymond was there. He didn't do anything in that game, okay? He didn't do anything. And that's for all the people that were like, oh, okay, well, LeBron got 41. Well, that's because Draymond didn't play. Really? Draymond did squat in game six. He had 8 points on 3 out of 7 shooting with 10 rebounds in 41 minutes with 5 fouls. Mm-hmm. That's not spectacular. I mean, definitely the 8 points and the 3 out of 7 shooting. He didn't have an imprint on that game. So why am I to believe that he was going to have an imprint on game 5 if he didn't have an imprint on game 6 and he didn't stop the Warriors from getting beat by 30 points in game 3 without Kevin Love? And then when you look at game 7, Draymond played the game of his life in game 7. He had 32 points on 11 of 15 shooting. He hit 6 out of 8 threes, 15 rebounds, 9 assists. It was actually probably one of the best game 7s in NBA history, if we're being honest. And the Warriors still lost at home, and they only scored 89 points. So spare me with all the Draymond Green talk, okay? Draymond Green, there's no evidence that suggests the Cavaliers would not have won that series had Draymond played in Game 5, period. I don't want to hear it. That's one thing. The second thing is the Stephen Curry injury. And then you made a quick reference about Stephen Curry being healthy this year. Mm-hmm. He was healthy last year, and I'm sick of Warriors fans and just, again, observers and national people suggesting that him being less than 100% is the reason why the Warriors lost that game or that series. If I remember correctly, in the game that he came back against Portland, he scored 40 points in that game. And that was in the second round. Yeah. He scored 40. He scored an NBA record 17 points in overtime and hit a three-pointer and pointed at the crowd and said, "I'm here, I'm back." Those were his exact words to the crowd, y'all. I'm not making this up. This is on video. It's 2017. This is all on YouTube. You can look it up. I'm not making it up. He said, "I'm back." He had 40 that night. The next night or the next game, he had 29 points and 11 assists. Does that sound like an injured guy to me? When they were down 3-1 to Oklahoma City, he had 31 points in Game 5, 31 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists in Game 6, 36 points, 8 assists in Game 7. Does that sound like he's hurt to me? No, it doesn't. It does not sound like he's injured. He had 38 points in Game 4 against the Cavs last year. Was anybody talking about his knee injury after that game where he had 38 points? No. They only brought up his knee injury after the Warriors lost. Then the Warriors lose the series, and then it's all, well, Curry wasn't 100%. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure he was banged up a little bit, but we cannot just hang them blowing a 3-1 lead on that injury as if it's on the same level or plateau as the Cavs missing Kyrie Irving for 5 out of those 6 games and Kevin Love for all 6 games in 2015. It's not the same thing. I've even had people try to tell me that the Andrew Bogut injury is the reason why the Warriors lost that series. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Andrew Bogut played a role, and the Cavs benefited from Draymond being suspended. They benefited from Steph being 99% instead of 100. They benefited from Andrew Bogut getting hurt, but Andrew Bogut only played 12 minutes a game in that series. So none of this stuff adds up to me. It's not on the same par with the injuries that the Cavs faced the year before. So that just annoys me, and I just had to get that off my chest. I apologize for me rambling for like 3 or 4 minutes on that. I just had to do it.
Okay, no problem. So here's the thing. One, Steph was hurt.
No, he wasn't.
He played. Yes, he performed very well. despite that fact,
he was only hurt when they lost. That's what it was.
No. See, this is the thing. I'm not a Golden State Warriors fan, and I'm not saying it. I'm clearly not saying it for the benefit of being popular.
Sure.
Like, because I'm on a Cavs show.
Sure. I wouldn't call this a Cavs show, but I hear you. Go ahead.
But you know.
I hear you.
It's like when I do my show, you know, people call it a Lakers show, even though I'm talking about all the teams. It's because I'm from L.A.
Right.
And here's the thing. I'm not saying, like, I think that it's kind of a false equivalence in a sense, because I'm not saying, oh, it was all because Steph was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it was all because Draymond was suspended. I listed several things as factors.
Sure.
And here's the thing. And here's the thing. The Cavs won. They won fair and square. It doesn't, like, all of that, none of that matters. But if you're asking me to assess this year, it's because now I look at Steph and I see that he's as close to 100% as anybody's going to be at this time of year. He's not, you know, he's not limping. I look at Draymond and I say, surely he wouldn't do something stupid like that again. Now all of this is predicated upon those things taking place. If Draymond wants to go out there and do the Karate Kid crane kick again, well then obviously the outcome will be a little bit different. If somebody gets, you know, dinged up, then, you know, we'd have to assess it at that stage. But think about this. Answer this one for me. Do you think that it even played a small factor at all those two things.
No, absolutely. I mentioned a minute ago that the Cavaliers benefited from those things. I'm not, by no means am I suggesting that they didn't benefit from Draymond not being there in game five. But I, like okay. I said, I just hear so many people casually suggesting that the Curry quote unquote injury and the Draymond suspension are the reasons why the Cavaliers won last year and not the reason why, and not because the Cavaliers were the better team. And that's the part that I reject.
I hear you on that. I definitely hear you on that, especially if it's a team that you've been following. 100%.
Let me just also add that I'm not. I was never suggesting that you were making any of those claims.
Oh, okay.
I just know that I wasn't attacking you. I'm just saying I'm attacking a lot of other people who I heard project out that nonsense that doesn't make any sense, and there's no factual basis to back any of it up. That's all I'm saying is that stuff is what annoyed me. Just it's the coverage of the Warriors versus the coverage of the Cavaliers that has never really sat right with me. And as somebody who does follow the Cavs, I'm able to see the inequities in that. And so, but that's another thing. But, and I think that, you know, you taking that stuff into account into your analysis of how you see this year playing out is completely fair.
But here's the thing. I think 75% of it was LeBron being Terminator LeBron in those last three games. I think those things played a role. But here's the thing. On top of I sound like Charles Barkley with the, but let me say.
Number one.
I think LeBron being incredible and Kyrie obviously coming up clutch and coming up big scoring wise in the last couple games. I think that's the main part of it. But those things were a small part. So when I look at things and with all things being even, definitely both teams being at least relatively healthy. Like I said, at this stage in the year, no one's 100%. But but nobody's nursing anything right now. I look at it and I say, hey. Then I look at, okay, so what's the main difference? The Cavs did bolster their bench, and I'm definitely intrigued to see if that depth that they added, will play a bigger factor in this series than I anticipated. But I see the biggest change is a guy named Kevin Durant as opposed to a guy named Harrison Barnes. And I know you remember how terrible Harrison Barnes was in those finals.
Harrison Barnes was trash in the finals last year. And that's a point that you made about the swap of Durant or Barnes for Durant was the same point that my man CL Palmer made on the podcast last summer. Shout out to CL and the Rundown South show. Nice. He made the same comment back then, back in July, and saying, look, man, when the Warriors get that ball moving and it swing to the man in the corner or the man on the wing, and that man is no longer Harrison Barnes and is now Kevin Durant, it's a problem for everybody. And so that's definitely a fair assessment to take. And I don't have a problem with anybody who believes that the Warriors are going to win the series. I think, they're perfectly capable of doing so. I just don't see it. And I think far more things are in the Cavs' favor that people really don't seem to be giving them a ton of credit for or credence to. But before we get into that, I did want to ask, in your opinion, who do you think, if there was one player that has the most riding on this series, who would you say that player is?
Okay, so I don't care about all the legacy talk and all of that silliness because it's most of the time it's had by people that don't know what they're talking about or don't have the frame of reference to actually have seen the older players in the 80s and 90s. A lot of cats on Twitter is 22 years old, so they want to talk to me about, oh, Jordan this, stop this. You didn't even see Russell Jordan, let alone Brian Jordan.
It's so
like,
true.
Let's stop this. I had a kid telling me all that I could ever hear about Kobe. And I asked him, how old are you? And he's I'm 19. And I said, how the hell do you know?
You don't even know Afro Kobe.
Yeah. You definitely don't know Froby. You definitely don't know him.
Not at all. Not at all. You don't remember Kobe on Adidas?
Yeah, no.
You don't remember the Kobe Sprite commercial? You don't remember none of that.
Yeah.
You don't remember the song with Tyra Banks?
Oh, K-O-B-E, stop. No, please don't. and I'm a Kobe guy, but yeah, that was terrible. So what I'm saying, when it comes to who has it riding on this, the easy answer would be LeBron because of the legacy talk. But it's probably Steph. Because if they lose, and I know everybody's gonna kill Kevin. Like, yeah, this folks with drafts of tweets waiting. Because like, oh, you win over there. Oh, you know what I mean? There's people waiting for that. But you think about it, Steph will probably take the biggest hit, not whether it's fair or not, because it'll be, yeah, see? Now, that's twice that we've seen that he didn't deserve that unanimous MVP. And, it, you know, then all of that rhetoric starts.
But go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, do you think Curry has more pressure on him going into this than Durant does?
No, I'm saying, I thought you were asking me who's going to take the biggest hit, like essentially, you know, from the media and from the fans.
Well, I mean, the questions are related. I mean, that's true. That is kind of more so what I asked, but I think those two things kind of go hand in hand, do they not?
I think unless Steph has a good series, which, if we're being honest, yes, he's done some scoring in the finals, but he has not played very well in both of the finals that he's appeared in. He hasn't, or at least I'll say this, maybe not played very well as a peer. He hasn't played up to the level that we saw, that we said, oh, okay, this may be somebody that we can start to elevate.
That is correct.
You know? So unless if they were to lose and he doesn't show, I honestly think he's going to get it. Now, look, people are going to be on Durant no matter what, just because they can't wait. They can't wait to talk mess about him, even though that's, in my opinion, that's asinine. And, you know, that's neither here nor there. I'm just one of those individuals that I can't find myself getting worked up over another man making a smart business decision, and one that, even though all these folks sitting there saying that they would never do, they would do right away if they could. I honestly think it's going to be Steph and maybe Durant. But you know, and of course, if it gets on the flip side, you already know people are going to talk about LeBron, because that's what people enjoy doing.
Where do you think the legacy thing, you know, because, and we can have this conversation here because we're two intelligent basketball fans in our 30s when we're two reasonable people. So we can actually have a real conversation about this. Where do you think, you know, the LeBron legacy thing and the Jordan comparisons, where do you shake out on all that? I wrote a piece on hiphopsportsreport.com this week regarding, or actually late last week, regarding Jordan and LeBron. And the purpose of the piece was just to kind of point out the validity of the people who love Jordan and hate LeBron, and the complete hypocrisy of those same individuals when they criticize LeBron, because Jordan was guilty of a lot of the same things but didn't get called for it for a multitude of reasons. So where do you kind of see LeBron stacking up compared to Jordan? I'm not asking necessarily, do you think is he better? But I mean, you can answer that if you want, but more so, you know, is it a fair discussion to have at this point, in your opinion?
I've always been one, and I'm going to answer it, but just give me a second. I've always been one that has avoided this question because, I, for one, the league in the 70s was different than the league in the 80s, was different than the league in the 90s, and so on and so forth. So I've always been one that appreciated generational greats. Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson. No, those are generational greats, all-time greats. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't really get worked up on, like, oh, is he one or is he two? Because, like, that's not something that could actually be proven. You know what I mean? But, yes, he's in that conversation because he's an all-time great.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely is. Okay, actually, are you a fan of The Wire?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. To me, Michael Jordan was Avon.
Mm-hmm.
Name rings out in the streets, never going to die, always going to be a legend, no matter what. And as a matter of fact, no matter what, always gonna come popping up, like how he did in jail, popping up like, hey, it's me.
Right.
He's always gonna be there. Kobe was Stringer Bell. Had his time. It didn't end well. LeBron is Marlowe. So, like, regardless of what you want to say, all three of those cats were gangsters.
They were.
Now I'm speaking in basketball terms. They're basketball gangsters.
Right.
All three of them led their pack at their time, and cannot be denied and not be doubted. If you like Jordan style more, you like Jordan. If you like Kobe style, you probably like Jordan as well. If you like LeBron, a mutated version of Jordan and Magic and what, you know, like a combination of a lot of different types of players, well, then you go with him. But at the end of the day, people are silly when it comes to like, oh, no, he's trash and he's great. No, that guy's great. That guy's great. The end.
It's so funny, man, because people are just afraid to put it in those terms like that guy's great and that guy's also great. Like, I don't know why we can't agree on that, because the people who back Jordan and Kobe, they for some reason seem to act like LeBron is the scum of the earth. And I cannot understand that. It's like, where does the hate come from? Why is that hate in your heart for this man who's been nothing, who's done nothing but live up and surpass the loftiest expectations that any prep star has ever had in the history of basketball? I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. But it's what's funny about your wire analogy was that I kind of thought you were going to go LeBron was Stringer Bell, because LeBron is, you know, he's not as aggressive. He's more cerebral. You know what I'm saying? But the Kobe, you know, didn't end well. You know, I thought that was hilarious. You know, I guess that Achilles tendon was Brother Malzahn, I guess, coming to get his.
Yeah. You know? That was good.
And
that was good.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
It was.
And
Omar was, you know, the other stuff that he had going on.
Well, yeah.
And again, this is from a guy that appreciates Kobe more than a lot of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, the facts are the facts.
I've never been a Kobe guy. Even back when Kobe first broke out and, you know, was new on the scene, like 98 All-Star game, like brand new, fresh face of the league type, gonna take mm-hmm. over one day. I was never a fan of him. I respect the hell out of him, don't get me wrong, but I was never a fan of him or his approach to the game, you know, and that we'll save that for another podcast. But but this podcast is more about Mr. My Name Is My Name, otherwise known as LeBron James.
Yep.
So as if there wasn't enough motivation for LeBron already, the stuff that happened today to his house out in LA is just absurd. And hopefully they find out who did that and they bring that person to justice. But, I think that everybody has kind of, it just blows my mind how everybody has forgotten what this man did just last year. This is just last year. I mean, we're talking about leading the entire series in all five major statistical categories. We're talking about mm-hmm. bringing his team back from a 3-1 deficit. We're talking about winning Game 5 and Game 7 on the road. We're talking about winning a Game 7 on the road against a 73-win team. We're talking about consecutive 41-point games in Game 5 and Game 6. We're talking about a triple-double in Game 7. LeBron James is, as you put it, a generational talent, and people are saying he's going to get swept or losing five games or whatever, and that, I can't see that happening. So let me just kind of rehash why I think Cleveland is going to win this thing. And you kind of touched on the simple math of it. I mean, we can get into the matchups and the X's and O's of it. You kind of touched on the simple mathematics and said, hey, man, if you subtract Harrison Barnes and add Kevin Durant, you get a juggernaut. You get an unstoppable force, you know. And that's one way to view this thing. I view it in a slightly different way. I say, in your opinion, Jabari, let me ask you this. In your opinion, what percentage of NBA playoff series are won by the team that has the best player?
Oftentimes that's the case, but what happens if I would take the next three or the next two or three from the other team? And no disrespect to Kyrie fans, because he's actually one of my favorite players in the league. I don't say things as outright like that, but just to be clear, that said, I would probably still take I would take the next two from, you know, Golden State.
Okay. And that's fair. But the question was, what percentage though wins the series if they have the best player though?
I don't have the math on
so,
that.
I'll throw out a number.
If it comes down to it, I would rather have the best player, especially if it's definitively the best player in the series.
I'll throw out a number. I would say about 85% of the time, the team with the best player wins that series. About 85%. Is that a fair number?
That seems high to me, but okay, we'll go with it.
I mean, I think that's how it plays out almost all the time. I mean, there's exceptions here or there. I mean, injuries, you can throw those out, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you could argue Kawhi was the best player in the Western Conference Finals and the Spurs didn't win. I wouldn't use that as the sample, but you know what I mean? Because he wasn't out there, but you know,
well, well, the only, well, here, like, not to throw it in your face, but the reason why I say that's a little bit, you know, high is because if that were the case in every single series that LeBron has ever played in, he should have won. Because he's been the best player in every single series that he's ever played in.
That's probably true. But he's won way more series than he's lost. And that's not to say that he hasn't lost series. You know, he's lost series, obviously, but he's won way more series than he's lost. And so maybe that number's slightly high. I would say at the floor, I think, is 70%. You know what I mean? And so, but here's the point. LeBron is the best player in the series. We know that, okay?
Yep.
So if you're matching up LeBron and Durant, anybody with a half a brain is taking LeBron, and that's not a shot at Durant. Durant is fantastic. Durant is capable of outplaying LeBron. I don't think it'll happen. I don't think the smart money's on that. But LeBron is just that great. And then when you look at the next matchup of two stars, so those are two small forwards facing off, and you look at the two point guards facing off, I'm taking Kyrie Irving. I'm sorry. I'm taking Kyrie Irving over Stephen Curry. And Stephen Curry, you can, if he's the greatest shooter ever, I don't have a problem saying that. I think Kyrie gets disrespected in terms of how good of a shooter he is. I think people recognize how great of a player he is most of the time. I don't think they recognize how good of a shooter he is. He's not on Curry's level as a shooter, but I don't think that there's six or seven guys in the league that are a better shooter than him, period. Kyrie Irving has destroyed Steph Curry. Well, he destroyed him in the playoffs last year. 2 years ago, Curry was out there in game one, or excuse me, Kyrie was out there in game one of that series. And Kyrie ended up getting hurt late in that game. Kyrie outplayed Steph in that game until Kyrie left the game with a kneecap injury. And from there, Steph kind of came alive and helped win that thing in overtime. But if you were to compare the two of them in last year's finals, Kyrie scored 27 a game to Curry's 22.5, shot 47% from the field to Curry's 40. They both shot 40 from three. Kyrie was slightly better. They both averaged about 4 assists a game. Kyrie was slightly better. Steph had double the turnovers Kyrie had per game, and Kyrie had one more steal per game. So when you add all that up, that's a whitewash. Now, I understand, having said all that, I understand that Curry was the number one option on Golden State last year, whereas Kyrie was the number two option. So that creates some, there's some imbalance from a defensive schematic standpoint, and I understand that. But we're talking about the two-time reigning MVP, the unanimous MVP, the guy that everybody was trying to tell me was better than LeBron James last year. So, so Kyrie outplayed him. Kyrie in the seven, what is it? So I guess they played 8 finals games against one another. Kyrie has outplayed Stephen Curry in those games. And so Kyrie, we know Kyrie is, in my opinion anyway, Kyrie's a better ball handler. He's not a better three-point shooter. Kyrie's a better ball handler. I think Kyrie has a better and more creative mid-range game. I think Kyrie has a better and more creative game finishing at the cup. Kyrie has more of a willingness to drive to the cup. I think defense is a wash. I think passing or ability to set up teammates is about a wash. I think Kyrie...
Whoa. I'm sorry, sir.
Go ahead. Stop.
I gotta tap you on the shoulder. There's a reason why LeBron James was screaming over and over and over again, we need a blank, blank, blank playmaker. Okay? It's not, and I'm not saying Kyrie doesn't have the ability to, but I do not think that he is a natural playmaker anywhere near to the level that Steph can be. Now, he's a much better ball handler and all of that stuff. Yes. And he can shoot. Absolutely. In fact, Kyrie with the rock, please let me see that all night. 100%. But as a playmaker, Steph has an advantage in that.
So you said natural playmaker is what you said at first. I don't think either one of them are natural playmakers. I think they're natural scorers. I think they're two guards and point guard bodies, both of them. I don't think either one of them, I don't think either one of them have an interest in setting up anybody, to be honest. But I mean, I think if we're saying who has the capacity to do it, I mean, I don't remember Steph Curry racking up a bunch of 12 assist games anytime recently. You know what I mean? So I'm failing to see where Curry is this elite playmaker or at least elite by comparison to Kyrie. Like I don't see that gap. I think that's pretty much a draw in my opinion, but reasonable men can differ, right? But the point is that, you know, that other stuff you didn't dispute. And I also think Kyrie is better in money time. So yeah, man, give me Kyrie over Steph. Give me LeBron over KD. So we have this juggernaut team that the Warriors put on the floor every night, and the Cavaliers have two guys that are better than their two guys, in my opinion. So that's one reason why I think that the Cavs can certainly win this series. The other one is just kind of inside the numbers themselves. Now, the reason I think the primary reason why a lot of people are focused on the Warriors as a heavy favorite going into this thing is based on regular season performance, which I think holds some weight and or should hold some weight. But we know that the Cavaliers were not really trying in the regular season. You know, I think they pretty much made that much clear. And I think we've pretty much seen that play itself out over the course of the playoffs. Statistically, statistically, from an offensive standpoint, the Cavs have been better in every offensive statistic except for points. Now, I know that sounds crazy, like, well, points, isn't that the most important thing? Well, yeah, but it's really only a function of the Warriors have taken more shots per game than the Cavs have. But the Cavs shoot a higher field goal percentage, the Cavs in the playoffs. And mind you, as I rattle off these statistics, know that the competition on both ends was equal. I don't want to hear, you know, I get sick of hearing people talk about how great the West is. Yeah, the West is better, but if they didn't play anybody in the West that was so great, then it doesn't matter. But the Cavaliers had a higher field goal percentage. They had a higher three-point percentage. They had they were better in offensive efficiency, which is points per 100 possessions, all of that stuff. They were either better significantly or slightly better than Golden State. And I mentioned to you in our playoff podcast about how the Cavs were the best three-point shooting team in the league. That bared itself out once again during the playoffs. The Cavaliers have been the best three-point shooting team in the playoffs by a wide margin. They are, I think Golden State's shooting around 36 or 38% as a team. The Cavs are in the mid-40s. They're like 43.5%, 44, something like that as a team.
Do you know what team defends the three-point line the best?
I want to say it was San Antonio. Is that right?
I think it's the Warriors. They're at least in the Warriors. Top three, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
I could be wrong, but I think they're in the top three.
So, and you brought me to my next point, actually, which was the difference between these two teams. I think everybody should. Okay, I don't think the Cavs are respected enough as a great offensive team. I think people kind of like say it, and then they kind of roll their eyes and think, "Well, the East." No, the Cavs can score on anybody, and they're the best three-point shooting team in the league, and they have been consistently all year long and into the playoffs. They're better at what Golden State made famous at this point. But from a defensive standpoint, though, that's kind of where the difference in these two teams is. Golden State has been better defensively all season. I don't know if they're in the top two or three defensively on the three-point line, but I'll tell you this much. I'm certain that Golden State has been better all year at defending the three than the Cavaliers have been. And the Cavaliers gave up a lot of open looks to the Celtics, and the Celtics just didn't make them because they're not that good. But that's going to be a problem for Cleveland in this next round. So they're Golden State more than capable of outshooting the Cavs in this series. And I know, again, this sounds kind of rudimentary, but if we're in a situation where the Warriors just shoot better, more consistently from three than the Cavs aren't going to win this thing. They're not, you know, and because they leave shooters. They will leave shooters open. Cleveland will. They got to hope that guys like Klay Thompson stays cold. What do you think is up with Klay Thompson? Mm-hmm. And do you think either he or J.R. Smith, which two guard is going to snap out of it first?
Honestly, I expect Klay to come to play. JR, you never know. But, like, as I'm sure you know, dude could just go off for 8 out of 10 in a game. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter whether the defense is there or not. If he's hidden, he's hidden. Klay, what I see oftentimes is he's asked to guard the opposing team's best player. And at times, he's got to switch off between different guys. You play basketball before I play basketball before. You know those legs get real heavy, on the offensive end when you're having to give everything you got on the defensive end. Now it's not like that's going to be any easier in this series because, quite frankly, he's probably going to be matched up with Kyrie. I don't think that they're going to have Steph on Kyrie. I think they're going to have Steph on JR, as a matter of fact. And likewise, I think you'll probably see Kyrie cross matched as well. I think both of those guys can go off, but I even if it's an ugly game, I would expect Klay to contribute more because of what he does on the defensive end.
It's funny that you brought that up because, and I don't know if you've watched any of last year's finals or even remember, the Christmas Day game or anything like that. Kyrie torches Klay Thompson to the point that it's hilarious. Like, because you would think, because Klay is a good defender, he is pretty quick, and he's got some decent size, that he would give Kyrie problems. He really doesn't, because Kyrie just owns him, and he owned him repeatedly in the finals last year. And one other thing I wanted to point out regarding Kyrie was that I don't think people are aware of exactly how good he was in this last series against Boston. Now, Boston, they have a lot of flaws, and we know that. And we know that Isaiah Thomas is a great offensive player, but is a negative on the defensive end. Yeah. But he was out after halftime of game two. And it was Brad Stevens' game plan to throw Avery Bradley on Kyrie and make Kyrie work for stuff. Kyrie Irving, in 35 minutes a game against the Celtics, averaged 25.8 points on 62% shooting from the field. He shot 50% from three, 92% from the foul line in five games. I mean, that is torch time. It was, he was not messing around. And that was against Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, you know? So to bring that now back against this team, against guys like Steph and Klay, I mean, this is going to be abusive. Like, we have to call the authorities on Kyrie, you know, based on that. Like, if he's putting up those numbers against Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, I don't want to see what he's going to do against Steph and Klay Thompson. But I do want to say that you bring up a fantastic point about going at a guy on the other end, because I think that was part of the Cavs game plan last year against Curry. Not only did Kyrie attack him whenever Kyrie got on him, but they would deliberately run screen rolls to get switches on the defensive end to put Curry in positions where he was forced to guard players he couldn't guard. Many times that ended up being LeBron. You have Curry guarding LeBron. That happened a few times in the series last year, and that is a no-win situation for Golden State. The difference this year, though, again, is Durant. LeBron is going to have to guard Durant because the Cavs don't have anybody else that can do it. So, I mean, Jabari, so how do you think that's going to impact this thing? Because, I mean, LeBron is, he's as close to superhuman as we're going to see, but he's not superhuman. I mean, he's human. he bleeds, and, you know, he has feelings, I think. You know, so he looks like a cyborg, but he's not a total cyborg. What's going to happen if Durant is giving him 30 a game throughout the course of the series? How is LeBron going to be able to carry that load offensively?
He's just gonna have to, like, and this is a cop out answer. He's just gonna have to do it. I'll try to qualify it a little bit. LeBron's gonna get his. Kevin Durant's probably gonna get his. I'm sure you've heard this adage before, but oftentimes it's those other guys that make the difference in the finals. Mm-hmm. Because I expect Kyrie to get his. I expect Steph to do what he does. I expect all those main guys to do what they do. Yes, they might, you know, there may be, small instances where they get shut down, or, like, you know, they get slowed down for a quarter or a half or whatever. But I honestly think those guys are going to be fine. You know, LeBron's played this game long enough to know how to balance things out. Also, whomever Kevin Durant's guarding, they are going to be in attack mode. Because that's the thing. You have to either tire them out or get them, get some fouls on some of these guys. Because otherwise, if you just have, like, if you don't tire Kevin Durant out on the other end, you know, I don't want to move it to five, but I'll say it's going to be a long, but kind of short series. So you got to go at him and find a way, to be honest with you, to knock him off, the role that he's on right now. I'm hoping that Tyronn Lue can come up with something other than just putting LeBron on him. I know it's like, okay, well, you look at the roster and you say, okay, well, what can you do? But I would hope that he's not completely burned out from just having to guard him. Because again, even though I think the Warriors are going to win this series, I would love, again, to be wrong, I would love for another seven game series. And then I don't care. That's found money at that stage.
You know what's interesting about Durant is I went back and looked at his numbers from the 2012 NBA Finals, because as I remember that Finals, for a few things on the Thunder side. I remember James Harden being a disaster. I remember Russell Westbrook having a bad half and then Magic Johnson going on TV and calling him the worst point guard he's ever seen. which I was livid when that happened. I think this was actually like maybe a month or two before I launched Hip Hop Sports Report. So I don't think I aired that publicly, but I was livid and I was totally in Westbrook's defense at that point. And then Westbrook came back and had like a 40-point near triple-double game that they lost. And Magic totally switched up his tune, right? But I don't remember Kevin Durant having much of an imprint on that series outside of game one. So I went back and looked at the stats. Kevin Durant was phenomenal in the 2012 NBA Finals. He averaged 30.5 points on 55% shooting. He shot 40%, a shade under 40% from three with six rebounds. That's pretty damn good. I mean, like 30.5 a game is pretty damn. I mean, I know that's what he does. Like, he's a scorer, but those numbers are pretty legit. Like, I was surprised to see that. I'm thinking, like, were they with all those numbers in garbage time or something? Like, what happened that he got those numbers, but they didn't really have an imprint, really, it didn't feel like?
Oh, I can tell you, because I remember the series very well. In fact, I was sitting there, I was openly saying, like, I want these young boys to win. Go ahead, Kevin Durant. He would start the games out well, play well throughout, and then in the fourth quarters, as often is the case with Scott Brooks-led teams, it was, okay, your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn. But the trouble is, he couldn't do it. They needed some sort of variance, some sort of variation from just ISO ball. And, that was the issue in OKC even last year when Billy Donovan took over. And quite frankly, the players, they have a certain responsibility, but I put that on the coach. I put it on the coach to figure out, okay, in game one, we tried this, this did not work. In game two, we tried this, this did not work. Okay, maybe try something different. Maybe try a different approach in game three or add a little wrinkle into it. So I don't think that'll be as much of an issue for him as it hasn't been, during this run, here for Golden State in his first year there. I don't think that'll be as much of an issue for him, because they've got a system that works for him. But I don't know that I've seen a more fluid system. When those guys get the ball rolling and they're knocking down that outside shot, I don't think I've seen a more fluid system.
No, I don't know that I have either. Durant and Curry have not played at this level until, any time this year until the playoffs. Like, they've saved their best for last playing at their apex like this at the same time. The trouble is, where does that leave Klay Thompson? Because Klay Thompson is kind of now the fourth banana almost, and he's really stunk it up in the playoffs. The point is that those guys can't seem to all find a rhythm at the same time. That doesn't mean they won't or they're not capable of doing it, but I just think it takes time to have guys like that gel on a team. The guys with that kind of ego, that kind of talent, all that stuff. When this guy's going, let's get him shots. Well, how do you, if Durant's going and he's getting shots and Curry's hot and he's getting shots, how do you expect Klay to stay hot or stay confident when the ball gets kicked over to him? I mean, he's a fantastic shooter, but that hasn't stopped him from stinking it up in the playoffs this year. So I think that's a real issue for them. I mean, it sounds like nothing, but I would just say that it took the Cavaliers quite a while for them to all get Irving, Love, and LeBron on the same page. And now, after 3 years worth of sweat equity, we're able to see the fruits of that labor. Love, LeBron, and Irving, I think, combined for like 88 points in a game against Boston or something like that. I don't know that Klay, Durant, and Curry have done that. And again, I'm not saying they're not capable of doing that. But, I think that there's a reason why super teams don't win in their first year. That was my main point back in July when I said in July that the Warriors would not win the 2017 NBA championship. So I've been on this a long time coming, Jabari. I've been on this train for quite a while. And it's not a disrespect to them as players or them as a team. They have a great team, a great system. They're perfectly capable of winning the championship. I would not be stunned if they won. But when I look at the fact that super teams, with the exception of the Boston Celtics in 08, which they probably shouldn't even have won that year because they got pushed to seven games in the first two series, with the exception of the Celtics, super teams that come together really don't win it in the first year. And I like the fact that the Cavaliers, this Cavaliers team has battle scars, I think that's a real thing, whereas this Warriors team does not have any battle scars. They haven't even lost a playoff game. And I think there's something to that adversity factor. The only adversity that they've really faced is the loss of their coach, Steve Kerr, but the Mike Brown situation potentially could blow up in their face. And that's somebody who's observed Mike Brown up close on for multiple stints with the Cavaliers. In one instance, you know, very close. I mean, I've seen Mike Brown in coaching settings in person. Like, I just leave it at that. Like, I've seen him up close coach people before, and that man is a wizard on defense. And it's no wonder why Golden State has been so efficient on the defensive end of the floor this year. But he struggles with in-game adjustments. And I would argue that he struggles with adjustments in general. I mean, sometimes his playoff adjustments work. Sometimes he's been stubborn in his adjustments or lack thereof, and it's come back to bite his teams. And you've seen Mike Brown up close. I don't need to tell you. He coached the Lakers, right?
I was covering the team at that time.
Yeah. So I just, and you know, Mike's a great guy. He's actually, I've met him. He's super nice, really nice guy, but I don't know if I trust him if the chips are down. And this is the big question about the Warriors. When the chips are down, you know, if they're down 10 points, we know they have the firepower to come back, but it's not always about firepower. When the chips are down and they're down 10 points and it's the fourth quarter and they're on the road in Cleveland and the crowd is going nuts, how do we know that this team has it that's going to, that makeup that makes a champion? And I know that sounds kind of cliche or whatever, but I think there's some realness to it though. I mean, we know the Cavaliers have that. We know it because we saw it last year, and we can't take that for granted. This is a team that's not going to die easy in Cleveland. But the Warriors, though, the Warriors, this is a Warriors team that has Stephen Curry, who everybody, like you said, was taking pot shots at, you know, saying that, you know, he stunk it up the last two finals, or maybe that's not a fair statement, but as you said, didn't play up to Steph Curry's standards in the last two finals, therefore didn't get an MVP for it. He welcomes Durant into his team with open arms. You know, but then if he gets outplayed by Kyrie again, then what are people going to say about him? Well, if Durant is owned by LeBron in his entire career, you know, I mean, LeBron has owned that matchup head to head in terms of win loss. So What happened? What is Durant thinking? You know, I made this switch. This is all going to fall on me. You know, we've seen Draymond Green arguing with Kevin Durant on sidelines and stuff like that. We know Draymond can flip out at the drop of a hat. I just don't know what's going to happen with this team if things start to get a little shaky, if things start to go south. How do we know that this team is going to not self-destruct on itself, which, frankly, they did last year when they were losing by 30 points and 15 points and 14 points and going dry in game 7 in the fourth quarter and stuff like that? How do we know, Jabari, that Mike Brown has what it takes to haul this team out of the fire and that this makeup of guys is not going to crumble under this immense pressure that exists because everybody and their mama believes that they're going to win this series going away?
The truth is, we're not going to know until they get things off about 23 hours from now. We won't know. One thing is for sure, I'll be watching.
Oh yeah,
you'll be watching.
Oh yeah, yo, that's must see TV.
I absolutely cannot wait. It's not that I was going to say I'm tired of talking about it, but it's not that. It's just I'm tired of waiting for it.
Yeah,
let's get it going.
The wait has been brutal. I'm not going to front on that, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be fun. I think the biggest question for the Cavs is they've become kind of reliant on Kevin Love as a scorer. And Love it's taken a while to find his place and find his rhythm on this team, but he's found it. He's been dynamic in the entire playoffs. But he's one of those guys, when I watch Cavs games, and I've seen a lot of them, when the ball rotates over to Kevin Love and he's taking a three-pointer, and it's a major momentum swinging three-pointer with the, you know, if it's a tight game or if it's late in the fourth quarter or if it's a big momentum shot or something like that, or if you know it's going to send the crowd into a frenzy, like those type of big buckets, because not all baskets are created equal, you know that. Those big money shots, he never seems to make those. He doesn't make them. So the Cavs they've become reliant on him now. Like, okay, Kevin Love, time to put on the big boy pants. Like, I'm not saying he's not capable, because we saw what he did in game 7 last year. He had about 13 or 14 rebounds and got the big stop on Curry at the end. So a healthy Steph Curry, I might add. but the point is that, you know, Kevin Love was a non-factor offensively the entire series last year. And I don't think the Cavs can afford to have that happen again. So what is Kevin Love going to do? I think that's the other thing. And I don't know if you have a take on Kevin Love or where he kind of fits into this whole thing, but I just see him as a crucial factor here.
I can actually summarize the Kevin Love situation like this. Don't try to beat Draymond off the dribble. Go to the block just like you did in game 7 to start the game. I'm sure you remember that. He started going to the block. He went to the basket. He cut off ball. Do that. Get him going that way. The threes will fall after that. But if you start trying to get him, if he starts the game off trying to attack, with the ball in his hand, from the perimeter, which I did see, I have seen him do at times, which makes no sense against Draymond because his feet are quicker and his hands are quicker. I think he's going to run into trouble again. If I'm those guys, I'm getting him going throughout the course of the first quarter by, with dives, with backdoor cuts, with straight posts, mix it up, but get him going that way. And I think you'll end up seeing a much better version of Kevin Love.
I would agree with that. And add to that, the garbage points, the offensive rebounds, him and Tristan crashing the glass, making Zaza Pachulia and JaVale McGee non-factors. I don't even know how much JaVale is going to play in this series. But I just feel like those two guys have an advantage down low, and they can play a little bit more physical. I mean, the front line of the Cavaliers has a decided advantage over the front line of the Warriors. And so, especially when it comes to being physical. So and getting rebounds and muscling people around in the paint and that kind of thing. So, to your Tristan point earlier, I think Tristan's going to have a role in that. Obviously, Kevin Love is going to have a big role in that. It's really going to come down to whether or not the Cavs can get stops too. I mean, and again, we can talk ourselves into circles over this until we're blue in the face, but the Cavs is going to have to find a way to get stops. They were able to do it last year. I mean, maybe some of it was just Golden State missing open looks. If you let ESPN and some other people tell it, like, that's all it was. anytime, again, man, the coverage of these two teams is just absurd. Like, anytime the Warriors lost last year, it was an accident. Anytime the Cavs lost last year, it was because the Warriors are better. They make more shots. It's by design. This is what's supposed to happen. Blah 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 blah. And it's just like, okay. I could do without some of that stuff, but I just, this is how I see the series shaking out. So I mentioned to you, I said Cavs in 6, and I think that the Cavs can actually win it in 5, believe it or not. And this is how I see it playing out. So LeBron has this crazy statistic where I think he's now won 29 series in a row where he's won a road game.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty ridiculous. So I see no reason to think that wouldn't continue. So I actually think the Cavs are going to win tomorrow night. I think the Cavs win game 1. Golden State, as crazy as it is, they were tied in after three quarters against Portland in game 1. They only scored 106 points. Now I say only in quotes because, this is Golden State we're talking about. They only scored 106 points and they shot 24% on threes in game 1 against Utah. And in game 1 against San Antonio, we all know they should have lost that game. They were getting their asses handed to them by the Spurs. They were down 23 in the second half, and then Kawhi goes down and the whole thing flips. But I'm a staunch believer that while you could argue that the Spurs should have won anyways, that if Kawhi had stayed on the floor, they would have won that game. San Antonio would have. And so the game 1 thing hasn't really worked out for Golden State. All of the pressure is on Golden State. They're the prohibitive favorites. The Cavs are coming in as with the confidence of a defending champion, but with none of the pressure. And I think that that's going to manifest itself in game 1 and in the series. I think the Cavs take game 1. I think Golden State comes back and takes game 2. And I think the Cavs take both games 3 and 4 in Cleveland. Now, game 4 is tricky because for whatever, I don't know if there's anything to this or not, but Golden State has won both game 4s in Cleveland the last 2 years. So That's something that the Cavs will certainly have to keep their eye on, as if obviously they're going to have to keep their eye on every game, Justin. But you get the idea. I see the Cavs winning both games. And then I see the Cavs being up, dun-dun-dun, 3-1, right?
So wouldn't that be something?
That would be something, especially after the Indians blew a 3-1 lead. So, the Cavs, I see them being up 3-1, and then I think the logical thing, if that were to happen, is you say, okay, well, Golden State goes home, they win game 5, and then I would see the Cavs closing it out in game 6 at home in Cleveland. But the other thing that the Cavs have going for them is this weird stat that is, let's see if I can find it here. Oh, here it is. LeBron James has a record of 10-0. LeBron and the Cavs, I should say, have a record of 10-0 in closeout games since he's returned to Cleveland. The Cavs have won an NBA record 13 consecutive closeout games dating back to 2009. So that sounds like it, you know, and again, we talked about this on the last podcast that you were on too. Sometimes you hear stats and it's like, that stat doesn't mean anything, or that stat doesn't sit right or doesn't have any merit. I think there's a little something to that, because obviously all those teams that the Cavs had going back to 09, LeBron was on all those teams, even on the first stint. So there's something to be said that, you know, LeBron's able to smell blood and he goes in for the kill and he succeeds. In a scenario where if it's game five and the Warriors are down 3-1 at home, I feel like Golden State should win that game. But, you know, the Cavs have an NBA record for consecutive closeout games going. I mean, it's not inconceivable that they could go in there and close it out in game five. So, again, I don't think that that'll happen necessarily, but I feel like it should go six. But I just see the Cavaliers, again, as a team playing with nothing to lose, man. They're the champs, but they got the championship experience with none of the pressure. I mean, how does Golden State compete with that?
I totally see where you're coming from. I think a case could be made for either team in this. Like, Golden State, comes in motivated. They're coming off that, giving up the 3-1 lead. They're coming off all the, all the talk all year, all summer, all the jokes that we all got in. I'm not a Golden State hater, and I got off quite a few 3-1 jokes. And
then
it got older, folks. And then you got older folks were, like going a little bit far with it, like, coming up with ratios and equations. Like, okay.
Math equations.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think a case could be made for both. Both, could be equally as hungry, equally as angry, equally as mad.
Equally as disrespected. Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why they play. All this talk, all that, all the stuff, all the buildup, that doesn't matter. Throw the ball up. Let's go. That's what I'm ready for.
I'm ready for the same thing, man. And for the record, fellow Hip Hop Sports Support contributors, Anthony Houston, he has Golden State in six as well. Mm-hmm. Kenneth Hicks, he has the Cavaliers in seven. So, what's funny about that, though, is that I've heard quite a few people say, well, not quite a few, because not really too many people are picking the Cavs outside of Cleveland. But those who are picking the Cavs, I've seen them say Cavs in seven, and which is interesting because it's like, well, so you're saying that they're going to go back to Golden State and win another game seven there against another super team. Like, I'm not saying that they, they've done it before. I'm not saying they couldn't do it again, but I just think it's kind of interesting, like, how people see it playing out that way. Like, I don't know. I think that if the Cavs are going to do it, they're best served to do it before game seven. Not to say that they couldn't win it, but I think that that's in their best interest. But we are just about out of time, man. I want to thank you for joining us again, Jabari. Let everybody know where they can find you, my man.
Yeah, no problem. Again, thank you again. Definitely appreciated it. The safest place for me right now is on Twitter, Jabari Davis NBA.
Jabari Davis NBA, you are a friend of the podcast. You are a gentleman and a scholar, sir. We appreciate you joining us on the preseason podcast of the year. The NBA Finals that we've all been waiting for is finally here. We out of here, y'all. Peace.